to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
America, welcome to our show. It's Tuesday. We're just going to crank right into the news here. Before we get going, of course, our phone number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room today, twiddling the dials, his hand hovering over that telephone for the instant that it rings. As we normally do, taking a quick look at the Dow, it had a really good day, kind of surged upward. Almost got into the 8,000s at the end of the day here. Now, the gains were mostly focused on the financials, that is, stock in various banks, mortgage companies, all of the very companies that sort of led the declines, and now everybody's kind of like piling back in there. Why? Because they're already starting to talk about another round of bailouts for these financial institutions. And as I keep telling you, this Dow Industrial Average, these stock market indicators, they are not a measure of the health of the whole economic system any longer. It is merely a gas gauge showing the amount of your money that is flowing into the banks and financial institutions courtesy of the United States government, the same government that sent all of your jobs to other countries just at a time when you most needed to be keeping up your mortgage payments. So really good planning here. Now, to basically show how chaotic the situation is getting, a gentleman by the name of Posner, apparently he's a judge, was a very outspoken proponent for free market and deregulation going back over the last decades. And apparently now he's saying, well, you know, maybe deregulation wasn't such a good idea. And yeah, it wasn't, because we have known from the crash of 1904, we've known from the crash of 1929, over and over and over again, the same lesson gets put in. When the financial markets are deregulated, they start coming up with games to make more money at the expense of the rest of the United States, and they'll amass these huge, huge fortunes, and then it'll all come apart, and they stick the debt onto the American people. And we seem to go through that cycle time and time again. So, you know, it's nice that Posner's standing there and saying, well, maybe I was wrong about that. This kind of reminds me of Captain E.J. Smith of the Titanic standing there on the bridge with the ice water up to his kneecaps and saying, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea, Bruce. And, you know, but of course, by then, it's way too late. And, of course, the two biggest problems that we had out of the last administration was the tax credits that made it advantageous for corporations to send jobs overseas, and, of course, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, which was the law which prevented investment brokerages and banks from getting into each other's business. And that law was created in the wake of the crash of 29, because leading up to the crash of 29, the banks and investment houses had been playing the same games they've been playing here for the last 8 years. And so why they repealed that act is an absolute mystery. Absolute mystery. It's one of the worst things they could do. And I forgot to turn off the little sound notification. That's what that little sound is. It means people are in the chat room, and they are chatting away at whatreallyhappened.com. All right, moving right along here. And again, already we're talking about more bailouts and more money and more the rest of this. Apparently, federal investigators have already opened 20 criminal probes into securities fraud, tax violation, insider trading, and other crimes linked to the bailouts. So it's already turning into this huge, huge criminal enterprise, ripping off the American people, and they've already got these 20 investigations going. More to come. More to come. This is not the bottom of it. It's just the start. Now, interesting news story we saw earlier today, and we linked it to whatreallyhappened.com, and the headline was Scavenging, the New Way to Avoid Going Hungry. And basically it was an article extolling the virtues of people who are on tight budgets, of simply strolling around the markets and just looking for anything that might be thrown out that's still usable. Dumpster diving, trashing. And it's almost like they're selling this as a new fashion accessory. This is the latest thing. You know, if your paycheck doesn't cover your taxes and your cost of living, this is the new thing, and we're all going to go have fun, and it's trendy, and it's up, and it's hip. It's just absolutely amazing. Now, over the last couple of days, we have been talking about California Democratic Representative Jane Harman, who was caught on an NSA wiretap making a deal with a suspected Israeli agent to intervene in the Department of Justice investigation of two AIPAC officials suspected of conducting espionage against the United States. And Jane Harman was going to basically try and have the charges reduced to something that was easier to get off of, which actually did happen. And in exchange, AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Affairs Committee, promised her their support to get Nancy Pelosi to name Jane Harman as chair of the House Intelligence Committee. And so this is really kind of on the same level as Blagojevich, pay-for-play kind of a situation, where Jane wants to be head of the Intelligence Committee, and so she goes and commits basically obstruction of justice to get that position. And then Alberto Gonzalez blocks the investigation into the pay-for-play because Bush needs Jane Harman to stand up and say the warrantless wiretapping is really kind of cool. And it circles within circles within circles. And not surprisingly, perhaps, House leaders in both parties aren't talking. It's a big secret thing, you know, it's, you know, old news, we don't need to look at it, it's just amazing. And we know what's going on. AIPAC is calling up everybody in Congress that they've given money to, which is most of them, and they're saying, drop it, don't talk about it, this goes away, you know, you're forbidden from saying anything about it. And that's exactly the way Congress is responding right now. So this Jane Harman scandal is going to be a big story here in the blogosphere and the alternative radio, and the corporate media is going to continue to ignore it. Now, one thing the corporate media is not ignoring, of course, is Ahmadinejad's speech at the United Nations Conference on Racism, Durban 2, they were calling it. And we are seeing all of these analysts trying to tell us what Ahmadinejad actually said. And there's little tiny sound clips, really just cut down to just a few words that try and support whatever the talking head says. But you need to go out to YouTube, and I've got it linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com, and you have got to listen to his entire speech in context, without editing, without creative editing, without commentary from somebody who's trying to convince you what it all means. You need to listen to the speech yourself. You need to decide for yourself, what is he actually saying? What does he actually mean? Obviously, from the reaction that his speech provoked with leaders of or representatives of Western countries with heavy ties to Israel all walking out in a huff and acting all indignant, obviously he said something that scared somebody. And you need to decide for yourself what that was he said and why it was such a scare. So the other aspect is that the UN summit finally approved an anti-racism declaration. It's one of those very bland United Nations kind of things saying, we are opposed to racism wherever it may be. And they don't specifically name anybody, which is a big difference over Durban 1, where they actually came out and said, these are the countries that are involved in racist practices. And they named Israel, which is what really kicked off this whole situation. And let's see, we're almost at the end of the segment here, so I know there's a phone call waiting, and I am going to wait until after the commercials to come back and talk about that one. So as we get down to the end here, the other thing I want to get into next segment is Barack Obama he's already waffling, the waffling president. He is saying he is now open to maybe considering prosecutions in the torture case. Don't believe it. It's another dodge. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio. country is coming to. I sure would like to know if they don't do something by and by. The rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Susan in Arizona. Aloha, Susan. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? I can't hear Susan. Okay, then
I,
we're
going. I'm really disturbed. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I'm really disturbed by the whole AIPAC Jane Harmon thing. But the only thing that I think that it does is that it kind of exemplifies how much AIPAC controls our Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's an important lesson, and I think this is an important lesson also because Jean Harmon's a Democrat. The fact that an Israeli agent can call her and basically tell her that she can get the chairmanship of a House committee.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this with AIPAC going back, I mean, for all kinds of years. I mean, there was that one scandal during the Clinton administration where the head of AIPAC had to resign because one of their donors, who was very upset at how arrogant AIPAC was getting, actually recorded this guy's phone call bragging about how they were already in control of the Clinton White House, and they were going to decide who the Secretary of State was going to be, and they were going to guarantee so much money for Israel. And there are a lot of Jewish people who see AIPAC as a real danger because they see AIPAC as reaching the point of arrogance where it might provoke the kind of backlash in the American public that is going to fall, unfortunately, on innocent people. And people who don't even support AIPAC. But, you know, we know that AIPAC was very heavily involved with this whole Bernie Madoff situation, that in point of fact, if you follow the money from Bernie Madoff through these various foundations and from the foundations to AIPAC and AIPAC to Congress, then a lot of people in the U.S. Congress right now won their elections using stolen money. And nobody wants to talk about that either.
I think they're going to be forced to talk about it because, like, for instance, on the Huffington Post, I was just reading the comments section about this whole Jane Harmon thing, and there were, like, more than 1,000 comments. And these people who I would probably consider so-called average Americans basically are now fully aware of the power of the Israel lobby. So I think that America's waking up. It's slow, but it's happening.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, of course, we had all of the various observances of Holocaust Remembrance Day yesterday, along with all the inevitable dragging out movies about Hitler. And, yes, it's Hitler's birthday and, you know, the whole thing. But I also noticed that there was a flood of articles about how trying to resell that idea that criticism of Israel is just anti-Semitism. And there was one article that came out and it said that there was a surge in anti-Semitism coincident with the Gaza attacks, as if nobody could have a real, genuine, legitimate criticism of Israel for what they were doing to the Palestinians in Gaza. And, of course, the point I make is this is like trying to dismiss criticism of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis by saying, well, you just don't like Germans. This is anti-Germanism. And therefore, I don't have to listen to your complaints about what the Nazis are doing. They're not doing anything wrong. You just hate Germans, don't you? And that's exactly what we're seeing here. And it's silly when you apply it to Germany. And it should be equally silly when Israel is playing the same game.
They certainly know how to play the Holocaust card, don't they?
They certainly do. But you know something? They've burned it out. They've burned it out because more and more people are realizing whatever happened in Germany, and I'm tired of the argument myself, but whatever happened is the first half of the last century. It's not relevant to today, especially when Israel is in Gaza with white phosphorus setting fire to kids, some of whom may be distant blood relations of Jesus. And, you know, we can't change what happened in World War II Germany. We can't. It's gone. It's done. It's over with. We can't do anything about it. But there are crimes against humanity being carried out today right in front of us that we can and should do something about, like the torture prosecutions and what's going on in Palestine.
Well, you know, I know that you're not an advocate of calling Congress, but right now I think that we need to call Congress. I think that the people who authored those torture memos need to be prosecuted. I think the state secrets privilege that Obama's now claiming and, like, a bunch of different illegal surveillance wiretapping cases. He can't claim that. That executive power was taken by Cheney, and Obama needs to let it go. So I do think that we need to call our Congress members, and we need to tell them in no uncertain terms, get Israel out of U.S. foreign policy and restore the Bill of Rights. Because right now we're facing a crisis. And you know, you talk about Hawaii all the time. And, you know, I've been to Hawaii many times, dozens of times. I won't go because I won't fly because of what the TSA did to me in Hawaii.
Yeah. No, we get that a lot.
And I think Obama promised change. Make him live up to that promise. Make every single member of Congress restore our Bill of Rights. This war on terror is basically courtesy of Israel, courtesy of 9/11, which we still don't know who actually did that.
Bottom line is this,
it's changed both our domestic and our foreign policy. We've run roughshod on Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq. And you know, we supported this latest Israeli attack on Gaza. But it's also changed our lives.
Yeah, I mean, they're reading our mail, they're listening to our phone calls, they're spying on us from blimps overhead. And, you know, it's like I was telling people on this show yesterday, the U.S. government is starting to treat Americans the way Israel treats the Palestinians. Constant surveillance, checkpoints, you know, show your papers to go anywhere. It is a very sick transformation that is taking place in our country. Anyway, anything else, Susan, or can I need to go on to other phone calls here?
No, I just want to say, like, 9/11, we lost 3,000 people approximately. Many of them weren't American citizens. So why was that one event, less than we've lost in probably any Civil War battle or many of the battles in World War I, why did that one event make us so scared that we changed our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and launched this endless war against Islam / terror / whatever?
Well, it didn't
make us go back to that.
9/11 didn't make us do that. In fact, there were a lot of people right in New York saying, don't use our tragedy, you know, to subvert America and change the world. It was Congress did it. And you talk about calling Congress, and the reason I say it's not going to do anything, I mean, think about last September, you know, coming up on an election, and 90% of Americans phoning Congress and saying, don't do the bailouts. It's not your job to take our money to give to companies that should go out of business. And Congress still did it. So the bottom line is, and I'm sorry, but Congress isn't listening right now, which means we are irrevocably on the path to some kind of a confrontation between the American people and the government. And I don't like it. I hope it'll be as peaceful and blood-free as the one where the USSR collapsed, but that we're on our way to that collision, you know, that's pretty much obvious. And I think calling Congress is a complete waste of time. They don't want to listen to us. They want to listen to the people with checkbooks in their hands.
Okay, maybe they realized there was a populist spirit going in this country, the tea parties, the tea bagging parties, whatever they call them. I mean, a lot of those are just completely different from
they could have looked out their window, but, you know, I mean, from the reaction we saw in the corporate media, I think it's pretty obvious that they've just taken the attitude of, oh, well, the people have had their moment of protest. Now they'll go back quietly to their work, and we can go back to quietly taxing them. Susan, we're going to let you go here, and when we come back from the commercials, we've got Rick, who's been waiting patiently on the phone for some time, and we'll get to that after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just track yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going right back to the phones to Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Thanks for holding on to the line. What's on your mind today?
Yes, I wanted to talk about the monetary system. Basically, if tax doubles, then that means that 25% or more of our income will be going to the government. Because I just got done paying like 13% in taxes. And if that doubles, that'd be like 26%. So that'd be like a quarter of all our money. And then when all this excess money hits the economy, that's going to devalue what I'm getting greatly. You know, so inflation is probably going to be in the 20% or whatever. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to touch on that real quickly. The other thing I wanted to talk about was I don't think the government thinks the economy is broke, because if you give me $1 billion for free, I don't think that I would think the economy was broke. These people went to school, okay, they studied for years on end about the economy and about money and about mathematics and all that stuff, and they're doing exactly what they want to do. They're preparing for a crash of the dollar, which will deflate it, and I'm sorry, I was looking at the thing. I saw my name on the board and I started reading. I don't know why I did that. But anyways, the crash the economy, because if dollars get really, really badly deflated, then their money, I mean, they have billions of dollars, so, you know, they're not worried about it whatsoever. They can invest, they can buy, you know, gold and stuff like that. So I think all this stuff is on purpose, because these, like I said, you know, the doctors know what they're doing because they went to school and they trained for years on end about
Can I intrude here for just a second? Because even though doctors go to medical
school,
I'm
pretty much done, so,
and they trained for years. Well, I want to respond to what you were saying. I mean, even though doctors go to medical school and they train for many, many, many years, they still have patients die on them, and epidemics still come along. And I think one of the things you need to understand is nobody really has a single grand unified theory of what makes economy work. In fact, if anything, economics has sort of validated some of the founding principles of the study of chaos theory, nonlinear dynamics, and so forth. And the reality is that you know, Harry Truman used to say, if you take all the economists in the country and lay them end to end, they're still going to point in different directions. And that's absolutely true. Every economic person has a different theory of how the economy should work, usually entrenched in their own self-interest. And I think a good example of that would be Alan Greenspan, who, when he was a young economic student, openly advocated a return to the gold standard and a currency of a fixed unit of value as being what would be best for the United States. Then, of course, he became chairman of the Federal Reserve, and he did a 180-degree about-face and said, oh, no, the Federal Reserve system is wonderful, and it's great, and so forth and so on. So it would be nice and comforting if we thought there was an absolute theory of economics that if we simply follow it, it's going to work out very, very well. Unfortunately, economics is so tied in with the rest of the world and productivity and technology that there are events that can happen in the world that will throw an economy into utter chaos. Now, in this case, and I know that there are a lot of people, and Rick, I think you're one of them, there are a lot of people who think that the U.S. government is deliberately crashing the economy so that they can bring about a new globalist financial system or something on that order. If they are, it's kind of a reckless and stupid thing to do, because people around the world are seeing that globalism is the reason the U.S. crash has become a global problem. And so selling more globalism as the solution is not going to make a lot of sense to anybody. So, you know, I tend to think what we're looking at here is generations of entrenched power and privilege in the U.S. political system that are just so fixated on keeping the money flowing toward them, and they're battling with each other in the political space and just grabbing what they can as fast as they can, and nobody's really thinking long term. It is an inherent intrinsic weakness in our political system that most of our leaders really aren't thinking about any solutions beyond the next election. If you're a member of the House of Representatives, you only got a, you know, 2-year term. You're not thinking about something that's happening 5, 10, 15 years in the future. You're thinking only about what can I do now that's going to look good before the next election so I can get reelected. And so the long-term, careful, structured plans are thrown out the window in favor of the stunt right now that looks good within the next 12 to 18 months. And as a result, we are seeing an economic and political policy that is simply an accumulation of things that look good at the moment, and if they have a long-term consequence, that's the next administration's problem to deal with.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I really respect your point of view, and
okay.
I understand it a lot better now. From your point of view, you know, I still think that they're purposely doing this, but
you could be right.
Now,
you could be right, you know. And I'm not going to sit up here and say that, you know, I'm always right and you're always wrong, because that's not true.
Yeah. Well, I look at the case of Hillary Clinton. When she ran for president, she took all her money out of the stock market and invested it in foreign currency.
Yes.
I mean, that wasn't the only thing she invested in, but a large chunk went just to that. Like, she knew something was going to happen with the dollar, and she didn't want her money in there, and she had to take it out of the stock market, because then she would have looked like she had, you know, a favoritism for certain companies she was invested in. And so, catch what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah,
so,
I understand what you're saying, yes.
But now,
you know, and
when you say, you know, they're unable to fix the economy and just making the problems worse. Now I understand where you're coming from, and it makes a lot more sense to me now that you explained it to me.
Well, the issue is that we may be in a situation where the economy really can't be fixed, and they may know it, and it's not that they're deliberately trying to crash it. They're just trying to loot it for everything that it's worth before they skedaddle for the border, is another aspect to look at.
Yeah.
But when I say the economy can't be fixed, it can't be fixed unless the government is willing to walk in and say, okay, all that derivatives debt and those credit default swaps, those are gambling wins. They're not real earnings. They're not real losses. Just write them all off, and let's return to status quo ante. Let's go back. Let's literally rewind the clock to the last time the economy really was working for all Americans everywhere and pick it up from there.
That was before the Fed.
The Fed, I think, is really what got us here. And the Federal Reserve was a great system for those first few administrations after it was passed, because the money was just falling from the skies on everybody. But they passed that debt forward, and that's where we are now. We are debt slaves to the private owners of the Federal Reserve. And it's like, what's his name, Rothschild used to say, if I'm in charge of making the country's money, it doesn't matter who makes the laws. And that's exactly where we are right now.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You got it, Rick. Thanks for the call, and call in again. All right. That is bringing us down here to the end of segment number three here. Now, interestingly enough, during the break, somebody sent me in an article. I just posted it to whatreallyhappened.com, basically bringing up the possibility. I mean, we know Jane Harmon was being blackmailed by the Bush administration over the possible criminal prosecution of her little quid pro quo with a suspected Israeli agent. But somebody's writing the article, is anybody else being blackmailed? And in point of fact, it's been my theory for quite a long time that you are not allowed into the upper levels of power unless you're being blackmailed by somebody. Because if you're blackmailed, then you're controllable and you can be depended on. And it seems like as we keep seeing these scandals come out, we have to ask ourselves, you know, are there really anybody in high office that doesn't have a skeleton in the closet that's being used to control them? We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of today's show after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we're going to wander off the politics and economy because it's such a bummer. It is so down. And get into some other things here. Interesting story. NASA has just released data. Apparently, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has ground-penetrating radar, and it's been orbiting Mars, they're finding all kinds of interesting things there. And it is revealed vast Martian glaciers of water ice underneath layers of soil and rocky debris, and these reach much lower in latitude than had previously been thought. Obviously, this is enough water to sustain human colonization on Mars at some point in the future. And it's kind of interesting because in one way, it's very frustrating to see all these wonderful discoveries being made about Mars. Because back in 1976, during the Viking missions, in order to minimize the danger to the landers, landing sites were chosen that where there was the least possibility something was going to go wrong. So they were aiming at flat, featureless. They deliberately chose the most uninteresting spots on the planet to put the two landers down in. And that's not saying that we didn't learn a lot of interesting things and so forth and so on. But, you know, obviously, because of the way we picked those landing sites back in 1976, we did miss a lot of good things about what was going on with Mars. And the idea that these glaciers are there, I mean, this definitely makes it far more practical to consider some kind of a permanent base or colonization on the planet Mars. You know, because if you've got that body of water, that is significant. And obviously, if there's that volume of water still remaining in Mars, then the possibility that there was or remains some form of life on the planet definitely goes up. And I'm going to put in a little bit of a personal anecdote here. The bioscience experiments that were on the Viking landers gave us positive results. I still have some outstanding cash bets on this thing. And a lot of us felt we had found evidence of life, but the results from the experiment started out positive and then very quickly fell off. And it was basically decided by NASA management at the time that what we had found was something biochemically active but not necessarily life, because otherwise it would have kept on producing the result and not just shut off as quickly as it did. And since then, there have been some scientists in Europe who are convinced that we did find life, but we simply choked it to death because we gave it too much food and too much nutrients and too much of water. And because it had been evolving in such a harsh environment compared to Earth, it was literally too much. And there was no natural mechanism to control the intake of nutrients. And we literally choked the organisms to death inside the experiment. Time will solve that mystery. I do think that the time has come for NASA to fund a mission to Mars specifically geared to looking for biological forms on the red planet. And, you know, obviously somewhere down on the equator where there's still a possibility of liquid water, possibly at the lowest altitude possible so that you have the highest blanket of air to act as an insulator. And so I know it would be very, very dangerous to do, but I think you need to send a life sciences probe to the bottom of the Valley Marineris. Plus, you're going to get some really incredible scenic views from that camera, from the thing that is on top of the thing that we hope that they're going to send down there. That would be fun to work on a mission like that, I think, and go out there and really say, when we finally confront absolutely unequivocal evidence of life on other worlds, it's going to be a revolution to humans' perception of themselves in the universe. Anyway, the other bit of news from astronomy is what they're calling it now, the quiet sun. Normally there's this 11-year cycle of activity, and at its peak it puts out all this sunspots and solar flares and all kinds of really amazing things, and then it's followed by the calmer period. And we're supposed to be going into a period where the sun is going to basically cause Earth to get a little bit warmer, and it's just not cooperating. And the point I wanted to make here is when you start talking about, you know, all these climatologists who say the Earth is getting unnaturally hot and it's actually getting, we're in a cooling phase right now for the last 6-7 years, and they talk about human activity and they dismiss any suggestion that the sun plays any role in the gradual cooling and warming of the Earth. They say, oh, no, it's the 11-year cycle, it's too short to really have an effect. We've only been able to make serious, accurate investigations, analysis of the sun for the last 100 years. Prior to that, we just didn't have the kind of equipment it takes to accurately measure solar energy output, with any reliability. So we've really only been taking the sun's temperature, if you will, for 100 years out of the last 4.5 billion years that Earth is estimated to have been in existence. We have no way of knowing if there are, in fact, longer cycles of solar activity. This sudden quiet sun phenomenon may be part of a repeating cycle. We also cannot just simply assume that the entire interior of the sun is absolutely perfectly homogeneous and uniform, and that there may be regions of more helium ash, to use that word, left over from nuclear fusion. And it may collect in some pockets, and it may impede at certain times with the ongoing nuclear fusion reactions. So we may see some random fluctuations in the total energy output of the sun. The bottom line is we don't know. We don't know what causes the Earth to get tropical all the way to the pole caps and then go into a complete ice age. And it seems to do it every 100,000 years. We don't understand all that's going on, which is why it gets really reckless when some people start tinkering with the planet Earth without really knowing what they're doing, as the genetically modified people are beginning to find out. Now, speaking of global warming and some of the extreme silliness that they are going to, we are now seeing this attempt to link obesity to global warming, that if you are a fatty, you are causing global warming, and your excess sweat is building up humidity, and your flatulences, and it goes on and on. And it is a bit of a reach. And it is a bit of a reach. And it's just another excuse to discriminate against heavier people. It's against the law to discriminate against women. It's against the law to discriminate against Jews. It's against the law to discriminate against blacks and Mexicans and everything. But you can bash on the fatties all you want all day long. You know, because it's their fault. And, of course, that's nonsense. It isn't. A lot of obesity is linked to medical conditions. And we are discovering more and more that some of the chemicals thrown into our food by food processors actually contributes to the obesity problem. Like monosodium glutamate, which suppresses the feeling that you have eaten enough and causes you to eat more. Aspartame, sold as a diet aid, actually makes you crave carbohydrates. Synthetic bovine growth hormone, which if it's not completely metabolized by the cow when that cow is harvested for meat or for dairy products, it'll get into you and your biochemistry will react to it pretty much the same way the cow did. And finally, they're beginning to realize there are some serious problems attendant on high fructose corn syrup, which is this wonderful liquid sweetener that food manufacturers love it because it lasts a long time and it's very inexpensive and it has a good shelf life and it's easy to operate with because it flows through the pipes and so forth. And they're beginning to realize that, too, has got some consequences for obesity, sugar balance in the blood, diabetes, and on and on and on. So if the government was really worried about people who are overweight, they should start banning some of these food additives. Instead, of course, they do nothing. And people who are overweight and don't realize it's because of the chemicals in their food, they are prey for the purveyors of diet plans and exercise machines and health clubs that simply sell them more of anything to extract money from them without really addressing the real cause of the problem. So this idea that fat people are now responsible for global warming, it's silly. It's utter nonsense, but it does betray a certain degree of desperation in the global warming cult. They can't sell it. They can't get traction with it. Less than 30% of the world's population thinks it's an issue anymore. It's fizzling out right before our eyes. That's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.